Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I intend to cover in this audio Psalms chapter 38. This is a psalm of David, a petition, so says the header. This is the string of 37 straight psalms, which can be either directly attributed to David or by inference. So we're still getting a look into David's soul. Now, this particular psalm is not one of those psalms that cause people to say that David is being self-righteous. This particular psalm is a petition for forgiveness because David has sinned greatly. So we start now in Psalms 38, verses 1 through 8. David says this, O Lord, rebuke me not in your wrath, and chasten me not in your burning anger, for your arrows have sunk deep into me, and your hand is pressed down on me. There is no soundness in my flesh because of your indignation. There is no health in my bones because of my sin. For my iniquities are gone over my head. As a heavy burden, they weigh too much for me. My wounds grow foul and fester because of my folly. I am bent over and greatly bowed down. I go mourning all day long, for my loins are filled with burning, and there is no soundness in my flesh. I am benumbed and badly crushed. I groan because of the agitation of my heart. Well, this is a pretty pitiful prayer here from David. It almost sounds like Job. Now, in verse 1, David says, O Lord, rebuke me not in your wrath. Now, interestingly enough, Psalm 6, 1, that psalm is essentially the same as this psalm with some differences. Let me read you the first verse of Psalms 6, verse 1. O Lord, do not rebuke me in your anger, nor chasten me in your wrath. Well, that's just what David's saying here in Psalm 38. The difference is that Psalms 6 has 10 verses and Psalms 38 has 22 verses. David exhibits a healthy fear of God's chastisement. Don't chasten me in your burning anger, God, please. He feels like God is really angry at him. Now, you know, when a parent chastens a child, disciplines a child, he's not supposed to do it in anger. He's supposed to do it very calmly. That's hard to do. I assume that David is just worried about God being overly angry with him, but of course God is not going to chasten his child in such a way that he wants to destroy David. He's not going to do that. But David feels like that. He says in verse 2, For your arrows have sunk deep into me. What are those arrows? John Gill says it's God's words of rebuke sinking into his flesh. Clark and Jameson Fawcett and Brown say that the arrows are acute pains and afflictions. It could be both. God rebuking him and the sickness that has come upon David's body. Your hand is pressed down on me, he says in verse 2. Verse 3, there is no soundness in my flesh because of your indignation. What does it mean to have no soundness in David's flesh? It means he's sick. Because he continues in verse 3, there is no health in my bones because of my sins. Now, it seems to me this is pretty obvious that David is sick here, although the NIV Study Bible says that perhaps David is using poetic language to describe his spiritual sickness. I don't think so. Adam Clark disagrees with the NIV Study Bible's suggestion, saying this, taking verse 5 in connection with the rest of the psalm, I do not see that we can understand the word in any figurative or metaphorical way. I believe they refer to some disease with which he was at this time afflicted. Now, as we go through this psalm, it will become very obvious. This is a physical disease that David is dealing with, like the burning in his loins, for example. There's all kinds of stuff. Adam Clark says that David describes a natural disease here cannot reasonably be doubted. All right, so David was sick. Now, even though it's true that David was sick, there are three things that one cannot say concerning his physical sickness or anybody else's physical sickness. Number one, this is wrong to say God will make everybody sick with whom he is angry. Well, that should be obvious. There are lots of people running around that God is obviously angry with. They are bodacious sinners, but they're not sick. Jeffrey Epstein, was he sick? I don't think so. So that's obviously not true. God's going to punish everybody with sickness. There's other ways God can punish, and plus righteous sinful people, and plus sinful people flourish for a time before they're dealt with and cut off by the Lord. So here's the second thing that's not true concerning sickness. Everyone who is sick, God is angry with. We go down to the hospitals and say, everybody's in this hospital sick. God must be angry with all of you. Well, that's obviously not true. In fact, Jesus said in John 9, verses 1 through 3, As he passed by, he, that's Jesus, saw a man blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he would be born blind? Jesus answered, "It was neither that this man sinned nor his parents, but it was so that the works of God might be displayed in him." So here you have a man with a physical ailment. He's blind. Jesus explicitly said he didn't sin to cause this blindness. The Pharisees had this idea that everybody who's sick, God is punishing for a sin. The Pharisees' attitude is very close to the hyper-faith, word of faith people, the Copenhagenites, who imply very strongly, if you got a sickness, it might not be because of a particular sin, but it could be because of your lack of faith, which I guess is a sin. Very close. That's why I stay away from Copenhagenism as far as I can get. And here's another classic example of someone who was sick God wasn't angry with. Job, he was scraping his boils with potsherds. God wasn't angry at Job. He had let the devil come in to test Job. All right, so those two things are not true, that God will make everybody sick with whom he is angry, or that everyone who is sick, God is angry with. Those two things are not true. How about the third wrong thing we can say? God will never use sickness to chastise his children. Well, he's using sickness right here to chastise David. I was talking to somebody recently about T.L. Osborne, who was a missionary famous for his healing ministry, and he had all kinds of miraculous healings in his services. And my friend told me that T.L. Osborne said that God would never use sickness to chastise somebody. Now, you know, my friend was quoting him. It could be that T.L. Osborne was just pushing against an extreme position that God would never heal anybody, which, of course, is absurd. And I'm sure what it could be that T.L. Osborne was complaining about is people who say, well, if you're sick, God is chastising you. It's from the hand of the Lord. It's an act of God. Well, that's, as I just finished saying, that's something that is absurd. Every sickness is not a chastisement. It could be that Osborne was pushing against that extreme. So I'm not blaming T.L. Osborne. I haven't actually listened to him to know. But I will say this, that if anybody says that God can never use sickness to chastise his children, and believe me, there are people out there that say that, they're wrong. They're simply wrong. Well, we have David here, as we'll see in the rest of the psalm. We also have the scripture in 2 Samuel 24:13. So Gad, that was one of David's prophets. So Gad came to David and told him and said to him, "Shall 7 years of famine come to you in your land? Or will you flee 3 months before your foes while they pursue you? Or shall there be 3 days pestilence in your land?" Well, there's an optional disease that came on the land as punishment. Pestilence, that's disease. If I remember correctly, that's the choice that David made. 3 days pestilence. Let's get it over with. 2 Chronicles 26:19. But Uzziah, with a censer in his hand for burning incense, was enraged. And while he was enraged with the priest, the leprosy broke out on his forehead before the priest in the house of the Lord beside the altar of incense. So God punished Uzziah for acting like a priest when he was not a priest. Leprosy broke out on his forehead. So God does use sickness at certain times, not always, but at certain times, to punish people for their sickness. So it is absurd to say that that never happens. But it's also absurd to say that every time somebody gets sick, it's because God is angry with them. That's absurd, too. I have never seen an issue cause more controversy in the body of Christ than the issue of divine healing. And it really is a shame, because I tell you, people are sick all the time, and they need God to take care of their bodies as well as their finances or as well as their relationships or who they're going to marry or what job they're going to take and all that other stuff that bothers us in this life. We need to have God taking care of our health because our health is so fragile. So David says in verse 3, "There is no health in my bones because of my sin." And as I said, I'm sure that's physical health. He says in verse 4, "For my iniquities are gone over my head." So he says, because of my sin, that's why I'm not well. For my iniquities, that's his sins, are gone over his head. That means he's flooded with iniquities. In fact, the Holman Christian Study Bible translates this, "For my sins have flooded over my head." David was drowning under his sin like an inundation of waters. Sin had come over his head. So David connects the sin with the sickness. He does it in his case, not in every case. "As a heavy burden they, his sins, his iniquities, weigh too much for me," David says. Verse 5, "My wounds grow foul and fester because of my folly." It sounds like it's a serious disease. His wounds are festering. You wonder why they were not dressed. And of course, he could be speaking poetically here. I grant that possibility, but I don't think so. Verse 6, "I am bent over," David says, "and greatly bowed down. I go mourning all day long. For my loins are filled with burning." Verse 7, that sure sounds physical to me. KJV says, "My loins have a loathsome disease." John Gill says that loathsome disease causing the burning was a hot burning ulcer that made David nauseous, a stomach ulcer. I wonder if maybe David had gotten syphilis because of his sin with Bathsheba. I don't know when the psalm was written, maybe before that sin or maybe after, I don't know. Sure sounds like syphilis though, doesn't it? Whatever, this is serious. There is no soundness in my flesh, David says. I am benumbed and badly crushed. I groan because of the agitation of my heart. So, with this Job-like introduction, we go now to Psalms 38, verses 9 through 10. David continues, Lord, all my desire is before you, and my sighing is not hidden from you. My heart throbs, my strength fails me, and the light of my eyes, even that has gone from me. My desires before you, David says, what desires? As John Gill suggests, his desire to be delivered from his afflictions, or his desire to be delivered from his sin, or both. That's what David really wants here. My sighing is not hidden from you. You see me, God. Have mercy on me. Verse 10, my heart throbs. My strength fails me. And the light of my eyes, even that is gone from me. Well, the light, probably, as the NIV Study Bible says, stands for life. David is saying, my life is passing away from me. David is about to die, he says. John Gill and Jameson Fawcett and Brown point out that one's physical sight often dims or fails during bad sicknesses. We go now to Psalms 38, verses 11 through 16. David continues, My loved ones and my friends stand aloof from my plague, and my kinsmen stand afar off. Those who seek my life lay snares for me, and those who seek to injure me have threatened destruction, and they devise treachery all day long. But I, like a deaf man, do not hear, and I am like a mute man who does not open his mouth. Yes, I am like a man who does not hear and in whose mouth are no arguments. For I hope in you, O Lord, you will answer, O Lord my God. For I said, May they not rejoice over me, who, when my foot slips, would magnify themselves against me. David is constantly worried about his enemies beating him. That's a recurring theme over and over again through these first 37 Psalms of David. Don't let my enemies magnify themselves over me. In verse 11, David says, My loved ones and my friends stand aloof. Now, how cruel is that for David's closest friends and relatives to turn from him in David's hour of need? Why did they stand aloof? Standing aloof reminds me of John Anderson's fabulous country song, Can You Catch a Falling Star? Can you catch a falling star as he tumbles to the ground? 'Cause you know how people are. Nobody loves you when you're down. And on and on and on that great song goes. You should look it up on YouTube and get a feeling for the tragedy of people who are great and who have fallen. How the mighty have fallen. What a tragic thing that is. And that's what's happened to David. He's a king and now his own friends won't stand near him. They stand aloof from the plague. Why? Here's some suggestions from John Gill and Adam Clark. First, from Gill, his friends and relatives thought that they might become infected by David's disease. Or his friends and loved ones, I assume his loved ones are his relatives, his friends and loved ones could not bear the stench of David's wounds, as John Gill suggests. Here's another possibility. His loved ones and friends couldn't stand to see David in his agony and to hear David's roaring and groans, as John Gill suggests. Or perhaps it was because David's friends and loved ones felt it was useless to be near David because he was dying. And they didn't want to be around a dying man. What's the point? Adam Clark suggests that his friends and relatives were like Job's false friends. They felt that David was under divine judgment. Now, of course, the difference between Job and David is that Job was innocent. David is not, by his own confession here. Big difference. Well, for whatever reason, David is alone. And while he's alone, his enemies are circling around him. Verse 12, those who seek my life lay snares for me. Those who seek to injure me have threatened destruction, and they devise treachery all day long. Because David's weak. He can't withstand the enemy's conspiracies. In verse 13, David says, But I, like a deaf man, do not hear. I am like a mute man who does not open his mouth. In other words, he's standing there in his misery, and he acts the part of a deaf man. Now, why would he do this? Could it be because he didn't want to deal with the pain of dealing with his relatives and friends? He just didn't want to talk to them because he felt so bad. So he just quit listening to whatever comfort they might be given. The problem with that, it says the loved ones and friends are standing aloof. So I don't think that they were really trying to say anything to him. So I don't think that's a good option. I think that what David meant here is what John Gill says. David is conscious of his guilt, but he could not vindicate himself. So I'm deaf. I don't hear any arguments pro or con about whether I'm guilty or not. It doesn't matter. I'm not listening. I know I'm guilty. I'm like a mute man who doesn't open my mouth. The reason I don't open my mouth is given in verse 14, because in my mouth there are no arguments. Another possibility one might think is that David was quiet before his friends and relatives because he felt it was useless to cast pearls before swine. Let's assume that his friends and relatives are saying, David, you sinned. That's why you're screwed up like this. And David's saying, I'm not going to listen to that, and I'm not going to answer that. And what's the point? They have no concern for me. It would be like casting pearls before swine, like Jesus did. For example, in John 19:9, when Pilate came out onto the praetorium the second time of interviewing Jesus, and Pilate entered into the praetorium again and said to Jesus, where are you from? But Jesus gave him no answer. What's the point? Pilate was going to kill him. It was a kangaroo court. Maybe that's why David didn't answer his friends and loved ones who had become his accusers. Well, the problem with that is that David was not like Jesus, and David was not like Job, because Job and Jesus were innocent when people talked to them. David was not innocent. So it's real easy to see why he's mute here, because he has no answers, no arguments. But the deaf part is a little bit harder to understand. Why does he not hear? Maybe he's trying to listen to what God is trying to tell him, and he can't hear anything. It's a little strange to me. Verse 15, David says, for I hope in you, O Lord, that you will answer. God was going to do the answering for him. To David's friends and relatives that thought David had been abandoned, or also to David's enemies, who are mentioned in the context here, those enemies thought that David was going to be defeated. Well, David is saying, I have not been abandoned, I have not been defeated, because you're going to answer, O Lord my God. You're going to answer my friends, and you're going to answer my enemies. David, by not talking back to his friends and enemies, and I assume, it just sounds to me like his friends are criticizing him, just like his enemies would be taunting him. Now I realize, of course, that that directly contradicts what I just said before, that since David's friends and relatives were standing aloof from him, they weren't talking to him. But perhaps what David was meaning is they were standing aloof from him in the sense that they weren't helping him and comforting him. Instead, they perhaps were acting like Job's friends. You need to repent, David. So I take back what I said, that I don't think David's friends were talking to him. Upon contemplation, I think that perhaps they were talking to him, and David says, I'm not going to listen to them. I'm going to keep my attention focused on God. But David doesn't talk back. He dealt with his disloyal friends and treacherous enemies with calmness and patience. We go now to Psalms 38, verses 17 through 22, and we will finish this audio. David says, for I am ready to fall, and my sorrow is continually before me. For I confess my iniquity. I am full of anxiety because of my sin. But my enemies are vigorous and strong, and many are those who hate me wrongfully. And those who repay evil for good, they oppose me, because I follow what is good. Do not forsake me, O Lord. O my God, do not be far from me. Make haste to help me, O Lord, my salvation. That salvation is temporal salvation, of course, not eternal spiritual salvation. Verse 17, David says, for I am ready to fall. Now, John Gill suggests that means that David is about to fall to his enemies, which I think is what he's talking about. But Gill also suggests it could mean David is ready to fall to sin. So he is prone to fall to sin. That could be. But I think he's about to fall to his enemies because he's so sick and beaten up. David says, my sorrow is continually before me. I'm never happy. Things are so bad. 18, for I confess my iniquity. I am full of anxiety because of my sin. Ooh, he's full of anxiety because of his sin. This is a great antidote to all those who think David was self-righteous in the Psalms. Remember that big problem about David's self-righteousness in the Psalms when he says, I am not guilty. I am righteous before you, God. What he meant was he was innocent of a particular charge brought against him. He wasn't trying to say he was sinlessly perfect like Adam was before Adam and Eve ate the fruit. David says he's full of anxiety. When one sins, that will make you anxious. It will destroy your peace if a saint of God sins. Oh, peace goes right out the window. Verse 19, but my enemies are vigorous and strong, and many are those who hate me wrongfully. Notice that David assumes that his enemies are wrong and he's right. Verse 20, and those who repay evil for good, they oppose me, because I follow what is good. Ah, repay evil for good. So now here David is claiming that he's righteous. He's good. Well, again, it means in general he wants to follow God. And he is following what is good because he's confessing to God. He's confessing his sin. That is a good thing to do when you confess your sin. The difference is that his enemies, those who repay evil for good, they don't recognize that they sin. They don't think that they sin, and they never confess that they sin. So there's a big difference. What's that old formulation that Adrian Rogers, the old Baptist preacher at a big Baptist church down in Texas, he says that sinners, unbelievers, leap into sin and love it, whereas Christians lapse into sin and loathe it. And that sort of describes David's situation here in this psalm. In verse 21, David says, "Do not forsake me, O Lord," and that's how you feel when you sin. You feel like, "Oh my God, where are you? You've left me. Make haste to help me," David finishes with verse 22. So this is a petition, just like the header says, a petition. David is praying for forgiveness and temporal salvation. So ladies and gentlemen, we're now finished with Psalms 38. We're ready to go in our next audio to Psalms 39, which we will entitle, "What is the Measure of My Days?" I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.